before we start any kind of speeches, we've got I love you back. Before we start any kind of speaking, we've got to talk a little business here. the size of our challenges had outstripped the capacity of a broken politics to solve. The people wanted, were desperate for a different kind of politics, a politics that was based not on tearing each other down, but on lifting the country up. A politics that wasn't about spin and PR, but was about truthfulness and honesty and straight talk, a conversation with the American people. Most of all, I decided to run because I was betting on you, all of you. Because some of you know I now live in Chicago, but I didn't always live there. I moved to Chicago after college because I worked as an organizer with churches who had seen the steel plants close on the south side. Thousands of people were laid off and the communities had been devastated. So I worked with these churches as an organizer to set up job training programs for the unemployed, after school programs for youth, and economic development for hard hit neighborhoods. And it was the best education I ever had because it taught me that ordinary people can do extraordinary things if they're given the opportunity. It taught me that change does not happen from the top down. Change happens from the bottom up. That's how change in America happens. And so when I decided to run, it was because I believe the American people are a decent people and a generous people. And they're willing to work hard and sacrifice for future generations. And I was absolutely convinced that if we could just come together across the divides of race and religion and region, if we could, all of us, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, Native American, young, old, all of us, if we could come together to challenge the special interests in Washington, to fix the toxic politics in Washington, to challenge ourselves to be better, better neighbors and better parents and better citizens, then I believe there was no problem we could not solve. There would be no destiny that we could not fulfill. That was the bet that I was making 1 year ago. And I am here to report that after a year of crisscrossing the country, racking up miles, speaking to thousands of people, shaking thousands of hands, kissing hundreds of babies, eating hundreds of chicken dinners, I am here to report to you today that my bet has paid off. My faith in the American people has been vindicated, because everywhere I go, people say they are ready for something new. They're ready to turn the page. They're ready to write a new chapter in American history. You know, everywhere we've seen, each early state, record turnout, young people coming out like never before. People who had been turned off politics for 20, 30 years, suddenly getting involved once again. And I would like to take all the credit for this, but I have to admit, it's not really me. A lot of it has to do with the fact that everybody knows that in November we're going to be selecting the next president of the United States. And no matter what happens, when you go into that polling place, the name George W. Bush won't be on the ballot. Yeah! Somebody cool. That is a letdown. But that's okay. Because he won't be on the ballot, which means that the era of failed politics, of Scooter Libby justice, because it's easy to be against something. You don't want to just be against something. You want to be for something. Yeah. You want to feel like we can still come together and meet the challenges of a nation. And we've got big challenges. Everywhere I go, I hear stories of struggle and I hear stories of hardship. And just this afternoon, we had a little round table. Me and four or five other women who had come together. They were mostly in their 50s, many of them had lost their jobs, or they were trying to figure out how to get out of huge back-breaking healthcare bills. One woman was had just been disabled, and so she had lost her health insurance. Another was 90, her mother was 95 years old. She was having to look after her, which meant that the two jobs she had, now she was only working one. And, you know, listening to their stories, one of them started to cry. The other started tearing up. Because, as one woman described it, they had done everything their whole lives to build security for their families. They had played by the rules, they had worked hard, they had saved. And now, they were just on the edge of not having anything. And they said to me, one woman said, how'd she put it? She said, all my life I never thought I'd find myself in these circumstances. I bought the American dream hook, line, and sinker. And now, I'm finding that it's vanishing, it's slipping through my fingers. A lot of people in Ohio who feel that way, you know, who feel as if the American dream is slipping away. All across this state and all across this country, you'll meet people who have seen the equipment on the factory floor where they worked for 20 years suddenly unbolted and shipped off to China. And suddenly, they don't have a job, they don't have a pension, they don't have health care, and they're having to figure out how to make it on a $7 an hour job at a local fast food place. All across this country, you meet people, senior citizens, who are taking only half a prescription because they can't afford the full prescription. Doesn't matter what the doctor tells them, this is all they got. They don't have enough money. All across this country, you meet teachers who are digging into their own pockets to buy school supplies for underfunded schools. You are meeting young people who have the grades, the will, the drive to go to college, but just don't have the money. So they're taking out $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 worth of debt. I mean, they're already broke before they even find a job. People are having a tough time out there, and you know, people don't expect government to solve all their problems. You don't expect that. You know you've got to work hard. You know that you've got to be self-reliant. I don't know a lot of people who are just sitting back waiting for government to solve their problems. But people do feel like if they get sick, if they have some bad luck, if they get laid off, that there's going to be something there to help them out, somebody to reach down and say, come on. And that's not what they're getting from their government. They don't feel like anybody's listening to them. And they're right. because Washington has become so dominated by the wealthy and the powerful and those who can hire lobbyists and the big corporations that nobody feels like they've got any influence over their own elected officials. All across this country, I meet veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan who are proud of their service, and rightfully so, because they've done everything that's been asked of them. They have performed magnificently. But you know what? But they wonder if their government is serving them as well as they are serving us. Because, you know, they think about the buddies that they've seen left behind. Sometimes I meet homeless and disabled veterans who wonder how it is that this country could have forgotten their service so quickly. Sometimes in rope lines like this one, after a rally, I'll meet a mother who, you know, is mourning the death of a son or daughter. One just in Wisconsin a week ago gave me this bracelet for her son Ryan, killed a roadside bomb, 20 years old. Gave me a hug, tears coming down her cheeks. Now that's what people are seeing in America today. And so they know that we have to take a new direction, that for ordinary workers, for ordinary Americans, that the current path is not working. And what I tell people is that I am willing and able to work alongside you, that I am in this to fight for you and to give a voice to you, to champion your cause. But I can't do it by myself. I can't do it by myself. Because, remember what I said, change doesn't happen from the top down, it happens from the bottom up. And so it only works if you, the American people, are ready for change. But if you are ready for change, if you believe that change is possible, then we can go ahead and tell the lobbyists that their days of setting the agenda in Washington are over. Because they have not funded my campaign, they will not run my White House, and they will not drown out the voices of the American people. People about health insurance, start doing something about it. You know, this is personal for me. My mother died of cancer when she was 53 years old, and that was hard enough. But watching her read insurance forms in the last months of her life, because, you know, she just got a new job, the insurance company was saying, maybe there's a pre-existing condition, maybe we don't have to reimburse you for your medical care. It was an outrage. I know what it's like to see a loved one suffer, not just because they're sick, but because of a broken healthcare system. And it is wrong. And that is why I have said that I will put forward a plan that provides every American health care that is at least as good as the health care I have as a member of Congress. That we won't exclude anybody from pre-existing conditions. That we will subsidize anybody who can't afford it. If you've got health insurance, we'll lower your premiums by $2,500 per family per year. We will emphasize prevention so we've got a health care system and not a disease care system. And we will not wait 20 years from now to do this or 10 years from now to do this. We will do this by the end of my first term. We can restore economic fairness in America. You know, I believe in business. I believe in the free market. I believe in entrepreneurship. I think there are a lot of corporations out there that are doing good work, hiring people, making good products. But when we've got a CEO making more in 10 minutes than ordinary workers are making an entire year, and the CEO gets a tax break, and the worker gets nothing, and if the company goes bankrupt, the worker sees his pension dumped, and the CEO's getting a golden parachute,
amen!
Then something is wrong, and something has to change. overseas. We're going to give them to companies that invest right here in the United States of America and treat their workers right. We're going to roll back the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy and give them to hardworking Americans making $75,000 a year or less. Give you a tax break, a middle-class tax break, a working-class tax break. Citizens, if they make less than $50,000 a year, they don't have to pay income tax on their Social Security. And we're going to adjust the cap on the payroll tax so that millionaires and billionaires pay their fair share so we can make Social Security there, not just today, not just tomorrow, but forever. Make it stable so people can count on it. I want to have trade agreements that work for not just Wall Street, but Main Street, so that they have labor standards and environmental standards that are enforced, and safety standards so our children aren't having to chew on toys with lead paint on them, or patients having to take medicines made overseas that make them sick instead of make them healthy. And I won't raise the minimum wage every 10 years. I want to raise it to keep pace with inflation, because if you work in this country, you should not be poor. That's a goal that I will set when I'm president of the United States of America. I want to put Americans back to work, rebuilding our infrastructure in this country. We are spending $12 billion a month in Iraq. If we can spend that much money in Iraq, we can find some money to spend right here in Dayton, right here in the United States, building roads, building bridges, building schools, building hospitals. And if you're ready for change, we can make sure every child has the best education we have to offer. Every child. We can provide a good education to every child. The problem is not that we don't know how to do it. The problem is that we don't really pay attention to every child. We say we do, but those children in the inner city, we look at them, we say, well, they don't look like us. That's not our problem. Those children in the barrios in South Texas, we say, well, you know what? They've got a, their parents have an accent. They're immigrants. We don't really worry about them. Those children in Appalachia, where there's not a lot of property taxes, those schools are underfunded, we say, you know what, that's their problem, tough luck. Well, let me tell you something, every child is our child. Every child is our responsibility. We need to lift up every child and make sure that every child has opportunity in America. And so I'm going to invest in early childhood education to close the achievement gap and make sure every child's prepared for school. And I won't just talk about how great teachers are. We will reward them for their greatness by giving them higher salaries and giving them more support. And I want the highest standards for our students. Young people are going to have to compete against kids in China and India, which means they're going to have to work harder. They're going to have to study harder. And I want high standards. And I want our teachers instilling excellence in our students. But I don't want those standards measured just by a single standardized test, because I don't want teachers teaching to the test. I want our students learning art and music and civics and science and history. And I don't know about you, but I think it's about time we make college affordable. So I want to provide a $4,000 tuition credit every student, every year. But something in return. You're going to have to participate in community service. You're going to have to be in a homeless shelter or a veteran's home. Join the Peace Corps. We'll invest in you. You invest in America. Together we will march forward. That's what America's all about. If you're ready for change, we can have an energy policy that works for America. Because our current one doesn't work. It makes no sense. I mean, think about it. We are sending $1 billion to foreign nations because of our addiction to oil. We are seeing the highest gas prices we've ever seen, $100 a barrel oil. And in the bargain, we're melting the polar ice caps, changing the climate of the planet. It makes no sense. And so we're going to have a policy that does make sense. By capping the emission of greenhouse gases that cause global warming, we'll generate billions of dollars. We'll charge polluters for the carbon they send in the atmosphere. That will generate billions of dollars we can invest in solar and wind and biodiesel, clean energies. And so we will create jobs in energy. We'll put people back to work right here in Ohio making windmills and wind turbines and solar panels. We will hire young people in inner cities to make our buildings energy efficient.
Don't dispatch.
We will go into rural communities and get them back on their feet by helping them have alternative fuels.
Obama.
Cellulose and ethanol, fuels that we can grow right here.
What's this?
In America.
That's alarm.
And you know what? We're going to have to make our cars more efficient. I know that the automakers don't like to hear this.
Don't dispatch.
In fact, when I made a speech to the automakers, I said, we got to raise fuel efficiency standards on cars. They said, well, you know, let's put it this way. They didn't clap. But that's okay, because I don't want Toyota and Honda to be the only automakers that make fuel-efficient cars. I want us to build the cars of the future right here in America. What they needed to do, we'll invest with them, but they've got to change their ways. And I understand they may not like what I have to say, but part of the job of the next president is to not just tell you what, you know, you think people want to hear. You've got to tell people what they need to hear. You need to tell people the truth. That is why I'm running for president. We can also have a foreign policy that makes sense, because our current foreign policy makes no sense. As Commander-in-Chief, my job will be to keep you safe, and I will do whatever is required to accomplish that task. I will not hesitate to strike against those who would do us harm. But let me say this, that means keeping our military as strong as possible, and that means training our troops properly and equipping them properly and putting them on proper rotations so they have the proper rest. And we're not doing that right now. And it also means that we are treating our troops properly when they come home. No more homeless veterans. No more begging for disability payments. No more waiting hours or driving miles to get into the VA. They have earned our honor and our respect, and we have a sacred obligation to our veterans that is not being met, and I will meet it when we are President of the United States of America. But keeping you safe also means using our military wisely. And the war in Iraq was unwise. Not only has it cost us billions, soon to be trillions of dollars, not only has it cost us thousands of precious lives, but it also distracted us from going after Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Those who killed 3,000 Americans.
Yeah.
It has also fanned the flames of anti-American sentiment around the world. It was an unwise policy. That's why I opposed it in 2002, and that's how I will bring this war to an end in 2009. It is time to bring I said, yes, we can. Because I remember what John F. Kennedy once said. He said, we should never negotiate out of fear, but we should never fear to negotiate. That's what strong presidents and strong countries do. They talk to their adversaries, and they tell them where America stands. And that's what I will do when I'm president of the United States of America. And say, America's back. We are ready to lead. And yes, we will lead hunting down terrorists. Yes, we will lead against rogue nations. But we will also lead in helping countries deal with the devastation of HIV/AIDS. We will also lead on creating a new treaty for nuclear non-proliferation. We will also lead on bringing an end to the genocide in Darfur.
Yeah!
We will also lead by having the highest standards of civil rights and civil liberties and rule of law and due process. We will close Guantanamo. We will restore habeas corpus. We will say no to torture. Because you will have a president who has taught the Constitution, who believes in the Constitution, and will obey the Constitution.
Yeah! Can. Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
So you may like Obama's ideas, but he needs to be seasoned and stewed a little bit more. We need to boil all the hope out of him. Maybe he'll be ready later. I notice people aren't accepting this argument. They understand the last thing we need is to have the same old folks doing the same old things over and over and over again. It's not working now. We need something new. Then there are people who say, well, you know what, the Republicans, they're very tough. They're going to be coming after.
With what?
What I say is, look, I revere John McCain for his service to our country. He is a genuine American hero. But John McCain is looking backwards. He wants to continue the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy. He's been leading the charge on Iraq. He says we might stay 100 years. sometimes they whisper to me when I'm shaking hands with them and say, "Barack, I'm a Republican. But I support you." I was born to a teenage mother. My father left us when I was 2. So I was raised by a single mom, my grandparents. And they didn't have fame or fortune. You know, what they could give me was love, an education, and some hope. That's what they could give me. And so I do talk about hope. We have hope on my signs. And there's one right there. And you know, I did a speech at the Boston Convention about hope, and I wrote a book called The Audacity of Hope. And so now I notice that Senator Clinton and others are suggesting that, oh, he's so naive. He's always talking about hope. He just thinks that you just wish these problems away. He needs a reality check. He's peddling false hopes. He's a hope monger. That last one I made up. But she says these things. The implication is that somehow if you talk about hope, then you must just have your head up in the clouds. You must look at the world through rose-colored glasses. Must not really understand what's going on. You must not know the score. But you know what? That's not what hope is. I mean, I would bet a lot of people in this auditorium who are going through some very hard things in their lives right now. I bet there are a lot of folks here who have lost their job or don't have health insurance or are trying to struggle to pay for a college education. Trying to figure out how they're going to be able to retire. You aren't naive. You're not romantic. You're not here because you think somehow change is easy in this country. You're not here because you're infatuated with me because I make a nice speech. That's not why you're here. You know how hard change is. You're not. Hope is not blind optimism. Hope is not being ignorant of the challenges, the burdens, the barriers that stand between us and achieving our dreams. Hope is just the opposite. I know and you know how hard it will be to provide health care for every American. If it was easy, it would have already happened. I know and you know how hard it will be to change our energy policy. ExxonMobil made $11 billion last quarter, the most of any company on record. They don't want to give up those profits. I know and you know how hard it will be for us to fix our schools, or to alleviate poverty, or to rescue young men who are going to prison instead of going to college, or to make sure that our budget is balanced so we're not running up the credit card on future generations. You know these things are hard. I know these things are hard. I know because I have fought on the streets as an organizer. I have fought in the courts as a civil rights attorney. I have fought in the legislature, and I've won some fights, but I've lost some too. Because, you know, good intentions aren't always enough. Because they've got to be fortified with political power and political will. I've seen how easy it is for politicians to turn Americans against one another. To use people as scapegoats, to blame immigrants or Muslims or gay people for the problems that we face. I've seen that. But you know what? I also know this, that nothing worthwhile in this country has ever happened except somebody somewhere was willing to hope. That's how this country was founded. A band of patriots declaring independence against the mighty British Empire, nobody gave them a chance, but they had hope. It's how slaves and abolitionists fought a wicked system, how a new president was able to chart a course to ensure this nation would not remain half slave and half free. That's how the greatest generation, and my grandfather fought in Patton's army in Europe. My grandmother staying back with a baby working on a bomber assembly line. That's how that greatest generation defeated Hitler, defeated fascism, lifted itself up out of the Great Depression. That is how pioneers traveled west. That's how immigrants came from distant shores to find opportunity in this country. That is how women won the right to vote. That is how workers struggled against violence and intimidation and won the right to organize. That's how young people in the early 60s, the late 60s, traveled south. They marched and they sat in. And some died for freedom's cause. That's what hope is. Imagining and then fighting for, then working for, struggling for what did not seem possible before. That is the chance we have now. That's the chance that this election offers us. Not to solve our problems easily, not to think that somehow just because we win an election that everything's going to be okay, but rather we have the chance to join together and work hard on behalf of future generations. We've got that opportunity to transform people's lives. Now, there's a moment in the life of every generation when that spirit has to come through. When we decide we owe the next generation the same chance as somebody gave us. When we decide that we have to keep the dream alive for those who still hunger for justice and still thirst for opportunity. When we decide we will not settle for what the cynics tell us we have to accept, because we can imagine a different world. We don't have to accept the world as it is. We can imagine